waiting to take it all in.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Earnings season means we'll all see a good number of individual health reports. They are companies whose economic blood pressure could foretell stroke or stride. And the whole lot of them will bear repercussions on stocks. Wells Fargo indicated record profits last week, and the markets were on fire. This morning, investors not so happy. Not only earnings, but a report the Treasury wants bankruptcy prep for June 1st has sent stocks lower this morning. The Dow is down about 1%, almost 100 points at this hour. NASDAQ down about 0.75%. The S&P 500 down about 9 points, about 1% there. No trading in Europe today as part of a holiday weekend, and some Asian markets were closed as well. The Nikkei shed about 0.5%. All right, let's reach out to Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. He's talking with us this morning. Sam, what's everyone keeping an eye on?
Well, I think first off, the markets are going to be focusing on corporate earnings. S&P expects that on a year-over-year basis, the S&P is likely to lose as much as 25% in this first quarter. But I think really investors are going to be listening to what kind of guidance companies will be offering, whether it'll be very gloomy or whether they actually could be hinting toward the recovery in earnings toward the second half of this year.
And a lot of these earnings will be banks, right?
Absolutely. Well, a lot of the banks, in particular, J.P. Morgan Chase, will be coming out, and also we're going to be taking a look at Citigroup. So, and the week after is when we're going to see Bank of America. So, in general, investors are going to be hoping that they get similar news from these other major banks that they got from Wells Fargo, implying that maybe the worst of the credit crisis is behind them.
Will they get that kind of news, Sam?
It might be a little bit too early to say, but I think certainly that the big variable is the mark-to-market. And certainly if you have a floor underneath the market for some of these troubled assets, you don't see them declining precipitously, then these banks don't have to raise additional capital in order to maintain their capital exposure levels. So if we don't see a further weakening in those markets, then that actually could provide at least a floor underneath the earnings for the financial stocks.
Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research. Sam, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
I'll tell you who else has been watching the banks, a government oversight committee. The Wall Street Journal this morning reports the group's been keeping tabs on bank bailout cash, and it's launched an investigation. They're looking into the hiking of interest rates and fees at banks that took federal money. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
The Congressional Oversight Panel monitors the banks that got a taxpayer bailout. The panel is preparing a report on potentially inappropriate lending practices, like Bank of America slapping up to $10 in new fees on a wide range of credit card transactions, or Citigroup promoting $5,000 loans without mentioning in their flyer that the loan has an annual interest rate of 30%. Other banks are offering short-term emergency loans with interest rates topping 100% a year.
What should happen if the fees are exorbitant, competition should drive them down.
That's Peter Hahn, a former managing director at Citigroup.
I mean, there's still several thousand banks in the United States. Many other players in the marketplace could offer the service for less if they thought it was worth it.
Hahn says regulators are forcing banks to keep more cash on hand. Banks need to find that cash somewhere, and they're looking to heftier fees and higher interest rates. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
You're hearing the Morning Report on Monday, April 13th, 2009, at marketplace.org. You may have already heard about the dramatic U.S. Navy rescue yesterday of a cargo ship captain. Richard Phillips was being held by Somali pirates. Three of those pirates were killed during the rescue. Now the stakes have been raised for future hijackings in the busy Indian Ocean shipping lane, and that means the cost of doing business on the seas is also going up. From London, here's Stephen Beard.
A London think tank estimates that Somali pirates extorted more than $30 million in ransom money last year. The total cost to the shipping industry is likely to be much higher. Insurance premiums have been rising fast. According to some reports, covering a vessel to sail through the Gulf of Aden has gone up 10 times in recent years. Some large shipping companies have decided to avoid the Gulf altogether and go the long way around the southern tip of Africa. But that is expensive, says Graham Gibbon Brooks, a maritime security analyst.
It takes about 15 days or so. It depends on, obviously, how fast the ship is going, but it takes more time, and therefore the goods at the other end are that much more expensive because of the overhead.
It's reckoned that sending one oil tanker from Saudi Arabia to the US by that route would add $3.5 million to its annual fuel bill. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
There's an annual gaming conference that starts in Phoenix today. The National Indian Gaming Association wants to keep everyone coming to tribal casinos in the midst of a fallout. It's not easy. Some tribes are having to cut frills or find alternative means of income. Here's Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll.
When money's tight, who's gambling? Doug Elmitz is a spokesman for California Indian Casinos. He says a lot of folks, actually.
The reality of the situation is that most gaming casinos are still making an awful lot of money.
True, the $26 billion industry isn't living as high and wild as it once was, but the same number of people are walking through casino doors. They're just betting less. So to cope, Indian casinos are slimming down. Gone are the spas, hotels, and golf courses added when times were flush. Steve Light is co-director of the University of North Dakota's Tribal Gaming Institute. He says tribes are spreading around their investments.
What a number of tribes have done in terms of industry, it ranges from things like making the Kevlar vests that our troops use in Iraq and Afghanistan to actually chocolatiers.
He says that doesn't mean Indian gaming is gone. Far from it. Tribes are just hedging their bets. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
One industry that's at least not shrinking massively in this economy is computer games. The conventional wisdom is that escapism sells well in a fallout. As Mitchell Hartman reports from the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, that formula is being shaken up a bit by consumers' search for cheap thrills.
You are ace pilot Rick Rocket, and you've just defeated the evil alien armada, but then all the massive damage you caused destroyed the space-time continuum, so now time is going in reverse.
Matt Gilgenbach wishes time was running backward right now. He demoed his new computer game at a trade show in San Francisco last month. It's called Retrograde, and it's won plenty of awards, but he says now's not the ideal time for a launch.
Now, with the economy the way the market is, it's definitely scary.
The gaming industry looks strong on paper. It grew 15% in 2008, but Dan Ackerman of CNET says that may not continue.
A couple months from now, when we ask people to invest in new hardware, maybe buy a PlayStation 3 to play Blu-ray movies or to play a big new game that's coming out like God of War 3, that's when we'll see if the game industry really is recession-proof.
Ackerman says game software is also making consumers blanch. A new action game with top-notch graphics can cost $60 a pop.
The guys who are doing really well right now are guys who do casual games. These are smaller games. You usually download them either online or through your game console, and they're a lot cheaper. They're maybe $5, $10, maybe $20.
Developers of casual games are on a roll. At Big Fish Games in Seattle, CEO Jeremy Lewis says business has been doubling every year, and it spiked even more in September when the recession started to bite.
Through customer testimonials, we know those consumers who have unfortunately lost their jobs and are looking for other jobs are turning to Big Fish Games for a source of entertainment and relaxation and a reprieve.
Lewis says they're online on their own time and playing his low-cost games, maybe to get a break from job searching. The company's nonviolent titles appeal especially to middle-aged women who, Lewis says, come to the company's website to chat about solving mysteries, finding hidden objects, and other things.
Very much like they would on a social network like Facebook, about any of the things that might be on their mind, including child support, their job loss.
Maybe they should consider game design. Big Fish, which has 375 employees, is looking to increase its workforce by 10%. Not bad in a recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Tonight, the New York Mets play their first regular season game at their brand spanking new $850 million baseball palace. It's called City Field. It's named after Citigroup, but officials of the struggling megabank are likely to keep a low profile at tonight's game, as Joel Rose reports.
In better times, Citigroup signed a $400 million naming deal for the park. That was before the company took $45 billion in bailout funds from the U.S. government. And a Citigroup CEO, Vikram Pandit, told members of Congress a few months ago,
"Let me be clear with the committee. I get the new reality, and I will make sure Citi gets it as well."
The new reality means that Pandit won't be throwing out the ceremonial first pitch at Citi Field. Company officials say he won't even attend the game. Instead, Citigroup executives are inviting community groups, including the Jackie Robinson Foundation's college scholarship recipients, to watch the game from the company's luxury boxes on the aptly named Empire level. Another Mets fan who will not be attending tonight's game is disgraced financier Bernie Madoff. The trustee liquidating Madoff's assets auctioned off his seats behind home plate for $7,500, with the proceeds going to repay Madoff's victims. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
China is promising $25 billion for its neighbors in Southeast Asia. That follows up on a high-profile G20 summit performance. Our China bureau chief Scott Tong is with us now from Shanghai. Scott, much of this money is for infrastructure improvement. Why are the Chinese doing this?
Well, China wants to help them do it for its own reasons. First of all, China's not been blessed by Mother Nature as far as raw materials, so it needs to get them somewhere, by ship or by rail or by canal, and this will help them get those. It also helps, after China makes all these products to export to the world, it helps them get products to markets in Southeast Asia. And for the countries that are receiving this, obviously they want better ports and railroads in general, so arguably it's a win-win situation.
So, Scott, the devil's advocate in me, though, says this sounds a whole lot like China buying influence. Is that what's going on here?
There's a big debate about this, and I think it just depends on how you see China. If you see China as a more responsible stakeholder in the world, that this is just a natural manifestation of its economic clout, you'll see it that way. This is just kind of natural. In fact, a lot of opinion polls in Southeast Asia find China's reputation is getting better, and it's better than Washington's reputation. If you think there's something darker, you start uttering words like Monroe Doctrine and sphere of influence, that China is rewriting the rules of foreign aid and kind of nudging aside these old institutions like the World Bank.
So what can go wrong with all of this then?
Well, Steve, Americans know how it can go wrong. If you think about Halliburton, you think about Katrina, we always wonder how companies get these giant deals. On this side of the world, China has a big deal with Pakistan to sell trains for Pakistan Rail. Now, late last week, a scandal started brewing there that the Chinese company involved, which actually beat an American competitor, General Electric, in the process, it got the deal, according to Pakistani officials, through fake paperwork.
So how do they defend themselves then against those charges?
Well, the Chinese companies in the middle of these controversies tend not to say much. But academics in China who watch these things, they say, hey, you know what? China is new at this. And if it's making these mistakes, it's because it's never had to deal with these international transparent rules before. And the optimist would say, well, these Chinese companies are going to learn their lesson. They're going to get burned. And in the future, it'll get better.
Marketplace's Scott Tong joining us from Shanghai. Scott, thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Hope you can join us at our website, marketplace.org, our online host and blogger, Scott Jaga, with a scratch pad there at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.